Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Alan.
And you are officially tuned in to the GG Dispatch. Each week on Tuesday, bright and early, we consolidate the week's biggest headlines in gaming news. Whether you're listening in on your commute, during your workout, or you just have us on in the background, we want to thank you for listening in. Speaking of thanks, another thank you to the kind folks at Audio Technica for providing the microphones that both Alan and I are using, the AT2020 USB-X. Whether you're just starting out on your content creator journey or you're a seasoned pro, Audio Technica has the products for you. All right, so we've got a new IP. Well, that's not a new IP, but we got a new series that landed this past week. And admittedly, I'm out of the loop. I haven't watched
for
it
shame,
yet.
For shame, Jeremy. For I shame.
I know. There's a lot of things on my backlog of life in general, and that has been added to it. But Alan, I understand you have spent some time with the Fallout Amazon Prime TV show. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on what you've seen. How much have you seen so far? And what do you think of it? What do you think it's doing really well? You know, what are you interested in seeing in the final episodes that you haven't gotten to yet?
Yeah, so I've been able to see 4 episodes so far, which is half of the run of 8 episodes that they have. Personally, like, I've never played a Fallout game, so, like, I kind of came into it fresh, kind of like I did with The Last of Us. So, you know, I didn't have, like, any sense of, like, oh, it needs to be this or it needs to be that. I just heard that it was really good, so, hey, let's go check it out. And, yeah, it's so far, it's been very solid. The actors that got all these roles are doing an amazing job. The writing is mostly solid. I really love the aesthetics, that sort of like 50s vibe.
Yeah.
But unlike The Last of Us, it has like a lot of color, even though it is sort of like taking place in a very, you know, depressed world, obviously, because it's sort of after, you know, in the Fallout.
Right. Yeah. It's a post-apocalypse, but it's a very vibrant post-apocalypse.
Yeah, it's got I don't even know what the word would be, but like just an interesting color palette. It's not just grays and browns and things like that. Like it's intense. Like you're gonna see some gnarly kills in this, so mm-hmm. If you're at all averse to that, maybe you want to stay away. It's you know, it happens because it's just, you know, it's a brutal world, and it gets sort of brought home with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard the violence is pretty intense in Fallout from time to time. Yeah.
No, it's almost like, you know, people's heads literally like explode, like someone just like or a machine grabs like a watermelon or something like that kind of.
Wow. Like, okay. Intense. Okay.
Like I said. If you at all like don't like seeing that, then this is definitely not the show for you. But if you don't mind it, then you're gonna find a lot to like here. The only questionable thing that I don't know where they're going with it, but they're definitely trying to set up sort of like a possible like love interest. But I don't feel like they did that good of a job the way they introduce it. It happens in the second episode.
Right.
Because then when you take it and then put it to, like, The Last of Us episode of, I think it's Bill and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's just on another level, man. That's like, it's got soul. It's got heart.
Yeah.
This one, I don't know if they're going to be able to get to that level. But again, that's just my initial impression of what happened for a couple of seconds in episode 2. Maybe it becomes something else entirely. I don't know. But for sure, I plan to watch like the other 4 episodes, and hopefully maybe we can just talk about it in full next week.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There was, before we go to the next topic, there was a broader conversation when Fallout came out because it released in the sort of all at once approach, so that people could binge it. And it kind of started the conversation up again around the format of, you know, kind of like bulk delivery versus weekly weekly series, because X-Men 97 is delivering weekly, and that's another series that a lot of people have been talking about kind of week over week. And then, of course, Fallout was delivered all at once. And I actually posted something on our Twitter because I'm of the mind, and maybe it's because, you know, it's an elder millennial in me, I don't know, but I feel like TV used to be a more unifying medium because you had the opportunity to like watch TV every week, right? And like kind of join the conversation with like your friends and stuff, and you all had that same experience of the latest episode. And when there was a really good pilot or a really new show that started off, people would get to work or go to school and they'd be like, oh my gosh, like, did you see, you know, I'm just pulling this out of my butt, but like a CSI, right? Or like, you know, the new season of Law and Order or whatever. Law and Order is probably not a good example, but because it's like more segmented, but you get the idea. Like, you know, did you see this show, this new show that landed? It's crazy. It's amazing. And people are like, no, I'm obviously I'm missing out. And all they need to do is go watch the pilot, right? And now they're in the conversation, right? Or even if they're a couple weeks behind, even 3 weeks behind, right? They can kind of play catch up and then join the ongoing conversation as the season continues. Now, when we have this like bulk delivery, it's really tough because 8 episodes of a show drops, you know, 8 hours of media that you now should go and consume, along with whatever backlog you have in your own personal library. Like, you know, maybe you're not caught up on The Mandalorian, or you're not caught up on like whatever other slew of shows have been coming out and that you need to watch. And the discourse immediately gets fragmented, right? Into like the folks who marathon the show all day one, people who watch like 2 to 3 episodes, and the people who watched like 1 episode, right? So, or none. So it was just really interesting to kind of see that discourse come back around. And I think we even talked about it a little bit last week as well. And yeah, I'm still of the mind that a weekly delivery is better because it allows you to keep that conversation going, right? Like if I own an IP, I want them to be talking about it longer, right? I don't want this to be, you know, kind of like flash in the pan and 2 weeks from now, nobody is talking about Fallout anymore. I want the conversation to keep going. So I don't know. What are your, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
This show would have greatly benefited from that release cadence because there are so many like, oh, wow, did you see that kind of moments? Again, with that brutality, that gruesomeness, and moments that genuinely like surprise you in an episode, especially if you're not familiar with Fallout at all. And you're right. Like that would have been carrying this for weeks, I think, because like, once this got released, people were already giving that their, you know, their hot takes, you know, the next day, and like they were done, you know, and but then that's it. Like they also want to limit what they say because they know that they've managed to binge this whole thing in a day, but not everyone else is going to be with them. So that definitely stifles the conversation right off the bat of people who don't want to give any spoilers and the people who don't want to experience the spoilers. So I think that this show for sure would have benefited from a weekly release. Although I do think some shows are fine to be, you know, like bingeable, like Bluey, like, yeah, put all of Bluey up.
yes. Support Bluey. Yeah. and it's interesting before we go to the next thing. I think it's interesting too, like another element of that weekly cadence really serving the show well is we have seen a lot of conversation about people wanting to get into the Fallout games now, right? So now people are like watching the show and they're like, okay, I've never played Fallout before and I'm really interested in the game. They're getting recommendations from people, which is starting its own discourse, right? But like, so if this was on a weekly cadence, right? And maybe not even just 1 episode, but maybe like 2 episodes drop, right? Week one. They watch that first 2 episodes, they're like, whoa, like I am sold. I think this world's super cool. I'm really interested. Tell me about games. And then they could be playing the games, right, as the weeks go on and kind of grow more connected to the world with each week because now they're immersing themselves in the game and also watching the show. So, again, I think that would have done a lot of good for the show because it's great that people are playing the games now, And that will continue. But like for the show itself, like I feel like we're not going to be talking about the Fallout show in 2 or 3 weeks. Right. Yeah.
So no, anyways. For sure. If I were at Bethesda, I'd be annoyed. I'd be like, oh, you know, we, you know, how did Amazon not know what we had here in our hands? We could have like had for 2 months because there's 8 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, but, to be fair, Bethesda's probably like, oh, cool, we're selling Fallout games again. Nice. You know, but like...
True, that's true.
They're probably still making some of that. But again, if that conversation was sustained over a couple of months, then it would have been week after week of, oh man, I got to get Fallout games, right? Like, so you would have had more Fallout players in week 3 and week 4 and week 5 and week 6, right? Versus right now, it's kind of, again, like a boom. Like, everybody's watching, you know, lots of people watch it, giving rave reviews. And then that handful of people are like, oh yeah, I need to get into this game. And then in a couple weeks, it'll be gone. But
no, I think for sure, like if they get a season 2, which I think they will, I think they did green light season 2 already. Hmm. I think that they would go the weekly route next time around.
I hope so. If you're listening, Amazon Prime executive, or anybody who has a say in how this is done, do a weekly cadence. It'll do you, it'll serve you well, I believe. But that of course gets me to thinking, much like when we saw, you know, like the Mario movie, or we see other good adaptations, or even the Dungeons and Dragons movie, right? Like, what did seeing this show sort of open the door for other video game IPs in your mind that could now be adapted more faithfully, or maybe there was a game and you're like, oh, there's no way they can do justice to this game. And then you saw Fallout and you're like, well, actually, maybe, you know, like, yeah, I'm curious if there are any other titles or series that you would love to see based on that.
Yeah. So I think that as we kind of talk about this, you got to keep in mind that like TV is like a very specific budget. Like they don't get as much money as you do in the movies. And I think that's something that the Halo TV show ran into, of like, you know, Halo is big, epic sci-fi saga. And then, you know, that the effort and amount of money it takes for like CG and stuff like that is way too much. It just bit off more than you could chew. And I think that's why it's been kind of just a meh show, like not really anything anyone loves or enjoys. So kind of taking that into account, I think one that would work really well is like a blast from like the past, in from Sony's catalog. It's SOCOM US Navy SEALs, the third person sort of Navy SEAL shooter from back in the PS2 era. And I think that would do well because shows like that just tend to do well, you know, the whole army type of show. And I think it would be something that, you know, it's not going to require tons of CG. It could be done on a modest budget, and I think it'd still be really good.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think something like that kind of lends itself to a more, you know, pared back budget. So I agree. I think that could do well. Ever since I played Horizon Zero Dawn, I really dig that core narrative, that core like sci-fi narrative. But the cool thing is, like, it is very techie, and there are definitely elements of that like high level sci-fi in Horizon Zero Dawn, but it's immersed in a sort of natural world, right? So there's sort of like that dichotomy where they could bring to life that like more natural world that's been overgrown and everything after, you know, 1,000 years after men fell or whatever, but also deliver those, you know, the long neck, you know, robots and like these kind of like sweeping environmental shots. And honestly, just like the core narrative, I really, really dig it. Like, I really like the idea of this corporation that kind of, you know, flew too close to the sun, accidentally created murder robots, you know, then took over the world and that sort of thing. So I would love to see that narrative adapted for the small screen, so to speak.
Speaking of Sony, again, like they got so many great titles that you can kind of go back and pull from, like God of War. I think so long as you kind of focus it not on you know, battling all these gods and stuff, you know, again, kind of keeping budget in mind, you know, but I think you could explore other parts of that universe, like, you know, what was life for Atreus like, living, growing up with his mom or something like that. Because that is such an interesting world, is such interesting characters, that I think you could reasonably pull that off in a TV series style setting.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of different ways that you could approach God of War, right? Like you could do a sort of early version of Kratos, right? Like do the young Kratos and all the tragedy that leads up to it, him as a soldier and everything else. Or you could fast forward and do this sort of, you could do the older Kratos, you know, God of War 2018, 2023, and just kind of, oh, God of War Ragnarok, and use like flashbacks, right, to kind of fill in some of the gaps. So like you get this general idea of who the character is, and then more insights on his background, you know, who these other, you know, characters are, and that sort of thing, to kind of like fill it in as you go. So another genre I think that doesn't get as much love these days is Westerns. And I think Rockstar has the perfect playground to explore Westerns, right? Like I think a Red Dead Redemption adaptation could do really well. And that's all I'm going to say. I think it would just do really well. I would be really interested to see, you know, how, you know, whether it's Amazon or Netflix or another major platform would bring that show to life.
I like that choice. What about like from Nintendo? You think anything of theirs could actually be done as a TV show?
I think the challenge with Nintendo is like, well, they've done Mario, right? They did the Mario movie, and they got the Zelda movie coming. And, you know, but like a lot of their stuff is so like kind of whimsical and silly, like Pikmin, right? Like, is there going to be adaptation? Like maybe a cartoon? Like I could see a cartoon or like a children's show or something. But I don't know. And Metroid, there's Metroid, right? But Metroid is like, way.
That's sci-fi. That's another like I think Halo style type of deal.
Yeah, and they'd be rolling the dice pretty hard trying to do a Metroid adaptation. I think. I mean, I would love to see it. Don't get me wrong. I think Metroid would be a solid contender, but like, how do you deliver the vision of, you know, Samus Aran and Ridley and everything else? Like, how do you deliver all of that stuff and not make it look hokey and make it seem like true to the core message? I think honestly it would have to be an animated series similar to Castlevania. I think that's the only way that you could really deliver on a Metroid series like that. But I don't know. I mean, can you think of any properties that Nintendo's got that doesn't really fall into that category?
Oh man, not really. It's hard. I don't think so.
I mean, there's like Smash Brothers, right? And like, yeah, I mean, there's not really, I can't really think of anything. If you're listening to this and you have like a killer idea for what IP Nintendo could adapt into a series that, you know, would win, would draw people in, I'd love to hear it, but I'm really struggling. I think Metroid is the closest, but it's, you know, take a bit of a swing to get there. All right. Well, that was fun. But let's get to the stories. We got six stories today for the week of from last week leading up to the 14th of April. Starting with Rogue Prince of Persia. So this is a new Prince of Persia game from the Dead Cells developer Evil Empire. This is from Jimatsu Sal Romano. Publisher Ubisoft and developer Evil Empire have announced the Rogue Prince of Persia for Steam, and it will launch in early access on May 14th. So it's coming pretty quick. It says, experience a fast-paced, challenging, but accessible roguelite as you master acrobatic moves and flow seamlessly between platforming and combat. Find new weapons, equip trinkets with special effects, and upgrade them to make your new own builds. Discover new characters, information, and areas as you try to find a way to save Persia from a Hun invasion and become the hero you have always wanted to be. Looking at the gameplay and the like screenshots, it is 100% Dead Cells. Like it is a Dead Cells reskin mostly. And that's not a bad thing. I love Dead Cells.
Exactly.
I have put so many hours into Dead Cells. So not a bad thing at all, but it's just really interesting if you've played Dead Cells, if you're familiar with the Evil Empire as a developer, you'll be like, oh yeah, 100%. So that looks pretty exciting.
Yeah, what actually like interests me the most about this news story is the fact that Ubisoft, like, for as much crap as people give them, like, they'll just try stuff. Like, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years back, they kind of made this really cool game engine where it was, like, very painterly. They released The Child of Light and then Valiant Hearts, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, like, they're always open to experimentation, which is something I really like about them. And I think this kind of shows that, because earlier this year, they released their own Prince of Persia, and now you're getting Evil Empire spin on it.
I honestly am super surprised that, I mean, obviously Prince of Persia is a big IP. It's a recognizable IP, but it's not really one that they put a lot of resources in recent years. Right. So the fact that we got the Lost Crown and we're getting this now, like within a few months of each other, arguably it's almost too soon.
Well, it is early access though.
It is early access, but still, it's really interesting. Like, it's not that I'm disappointed or anything. I'm actually very pleasantly surprised that they're doing this, but that, you know, it is pretty cool that they're basically taking this IP that they weren't doing too much with for a while, and they're like, here's a first party title. Oh, and by the way, here's something kind of fun, interesting from Evil Empire as well. And I agree. I think that, you know, utilizing this other dev and basically saying like, hey, here's our IP, do something with it, right? Like, will you do something kind of weird with our IP? Because we're, you know, we want to kind of mix it up and, you know, we've got other bigger things that we're working on, either for the same IP or for other projects. And so it's like, I think it's a pretty unique approach and one that I wonder if, you know, other developers would take on to be like, you know, while, for example, I don't think it's going to happen, but like, for example, if Rockstar was like, hey, you know, we're working on GTA 6, obviously. But in the meantime, what if we grabbed a random indie dev and was like, hey, make a little GTA game, right? Like, make a little like classic top down, you know, GTA, like, you know, heist game or, you know, something like that, like something smaller, more petite, but something that fans of the IP could be like, oh, cool. Like, I dig this. I can mess with this. While those bigger projects are going on, I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, I think that this could be a path forward for, like, you know, this issue that we're kind of like running into, in that these big, massive AAA games are taking, you know, 6-7 years to release. Like, hey, why doesn't a publisher let an indie dev kind of just take their own kind of like spin on it and just see what happens? Because like, I'd love to see what indie devs could do with, you know, God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, or in the case of Rockstar, they got this incredible IP called Bully that like they just are not doing anything with it.
Oh,
like,
right.
If they do an indie dev, what can they do? Could it become a visual novel? Could it become, you know, any number of things? And I think that would be an interesting way for indie devs to have steady work. And then also for the bigger publishers that to be able to kind of, you know, bring in revenue and have their IP still be fresh and, you know, have something out there that gamers can play before the next big tentpole release.
Yeah, for sure. I really dig that. I do hope that, first, I hope that people enjoy Rogue Prince of Persia. I hope that fans of Evil Empire like it and fans of Prince of Persia like it, and that generally people can say, hey, you know what, this was a good pick, this is a good match, you know, and it garners some positive press, because I think ultimately that's what, and if it sells, right, because ultimately that's what's going to drive developers taking that strategy on in the future, right? They're not going to be like, you know what, you're right, we should chop our IP around and just, like, you know, let devs do whatever they want and then like have it not sell and then by kind of indirectly damage the brand, right, by releasing a game that doesn't perform. So there is a bit of a risk there, but if it does well, if it reviews well and performs well and sells well, I'm hoping that other devs will be like, yeah, you know what, we've got a couple years left on our timeline, or two, you know, 3 or 4 years left on our timeline for this next big property of ours. Let's give like an indie dev like 2 years, right? Like, or a year and a half to 2 years, and be like, hey, take our IP. You've got a good foundation with whatever title you've got, like a puzzler or a racing game or whatever. Like, give it some tweaks, massage it a little bit, put our brand on it, have fun, right? That could be interesting to see as a path forward.
I really hope they take it. You know, obviously, like you said, they're all probably scared of someone like lowering the IP or whatever, but I think, you know, people understand, like, seeing a smaller title like that, I don't think they would go like, oh, well, this one game was kind of just okay, it's over for God of War. You know, I think that enough conversation happens online for people to go like, no, this is just, you know, cool indie spinoff. Just go check it out.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Next story. Former Blizzard boss Mike Ybarra would like to tip developers. This is from Vicky Blake at Eurogamer. Former Blizzard boss Mike Ybarra would like the option to tip developers once he's completed a game. Whilst acknowledging that most will dislike this idea, spoiler alert, people did not like the idea, Ybarra says that when he beats a game, he has often thought, man, I wish I could give these folks another $10 or $20 because it was worth more than my initial $70. I've thought about this idea for a while. As a player, since I've been diving into single-player games lately, when I beat a game, there are some that just leave me in awe of how amazing the experience was. At the end of the game, I've often thought, I wish I could give these folks another $10 or $20 because it was worth more than my initial $70, and they didn't try to nickel and dime me every second. Games like Horizon Zero Dawn, Gears of War, Red Dead Redemption 2, Baldur's Gate 3, etc., etc. And then he says, I realize most of us like the idea, by the way. I realize we are tired of tipping and everything else, but I view this different from a pressure to tip type scenario many face and give feedback on. I don't know. Have you ever... Okay. Is there a game that you've played in the last...
No.
No? Okay.
No. Like, this is clearly from the galaxy brain of a dude who's not working at Blizzard anymore. He just has way too much time on his hands.
I mean, I'm thinking now. Like, he does have me thinking about it. Like, is there a game that I've played in the last year and I rolled credits on it and I was like, man, you know what? I think I need to give these guys another $20, you know, like, where's the button? You know, where can I, you know, who can I mail this check to? Gosh, the funny thing is, I guess Helldivers 2 would probably be the closest thing, but it's live service.
It's called DLC.
Right. It's called DLC and it's live service. Right. And I mean, other than that, I think all the other games are charging what they're worth, you know, like that's the market that they're in. Gosh, it is an interesting concept, but yeah.
Wild concept. I don't know if I'd go to, I don't know, let me call it interesting.
I mean, sure. Interesting for, like you said, a guy who isn't at Blizzard anymore and probably, you know, doesn't have to work another day in his life. But I mean, yeah. It does get me thinking about tipping culture in general. I don't know.
Yeah, it's already like to fatiguing levels. Like, you can just see it. It's like,
and it's weird. Like, it's really tough. Like, I understand, like, people are out there trying to make a living and everything. But, like, when I go and buy, like, a can of soda from a vendor, like, why are you asking me if I want to leave a tip? Like, I got it out of the fridge. I swiped my card.
What's next, Jeremy? You go over to the vending machine, and the vending machine is like, hey, how about an extra quarter? I did.
Yeah, exactly.
Your mechanical arm did so much work for you.
Did I dispense the soda to a satisfactory level? If you thought so, leave an extra quarter. No, I mean, yeah, I think the core sentiment, and I don't know if it's necessarily my core sentiment, but I think the core sentiment is one that we all share, which is like, hey, game devs work really hard, and there are some really amazing games out there that leave an impression, and we're very thankful to them, right? Like, when they deliver a great experience, whether it's, you know, whether it's Baldur's Gate 3 or Red Dead Redemption or whatever the game is, right? And we finish and we're like, wow, that was a video ass game, right? Like, that was a really, really good game. That's enough. I think like it's that impact. Because
the tip is the friends we made along the way.
Exactly. Kind of. And it's also about the loyalty, right? Like it's about the customer loyalty, because then the next time that studio is going to make a game, you're going to be there day one, front of line, right? Like, so, you know, your tip, your kind of persisting value is that you are a developer that makes good games and that brings an audience back over and over again. Not that you're a developer that once we finish the game, there's going to be a screen that pops up that's like, did you really like this game? If you want to show us how much you like this game, you know, 10%, 15%, 20%, like, you know, I don't think that's needed. So, oh, Mike Ibarra, don't ever change. Okay. Speaking of kind of odd game executive stories, we've got the supremely weird shutdown of game dev studio Probability or Possibility Space. This is from Rebecca Valentine at IGN. It says, Possibility Space, the game development studio founded by State of Decay creator Jeff Strain, has seemingly shut down following in the footsteps of another of Strain Studios, Crop Circle Games. This news comes from multiple employees posting to X/Twitter, stating they have been laid off along with the rest of their fellow coworkers. Possibility Space was founded in 2021 by Jeff Strain to work on an unannounced AAA game under the Prytania Media label. Prytania Media itself was founded by Strain and his wife, Annie DeLisi Strain, in 2021, and in the years since has built up its label with studios including Crop Circle Games, Dewan Entertainment, and Fang and Claw. However, the label has seemingly been in turmoil in recent months. After undergoing layoffs in February, Crop Circle Games shut down entirely just 3 years after it was established. While at both the DICE Summit in February and the Game Developers Conference in March, a number of current and former developers with connections to Prytania Media Studios approached me to express fear and anger with how the situation at Crop Circle had been handled. The initial layoffs were sudden and messy, with some employees being furloughed and kept on the hook for weeks only to be laid off later anyway. The strange and upsetting saga continued just over a week ago when CEO Annie Strain publishing a lengthy letter on the company website. In the letter, she stated that Prytania Media was undergoing difficult but absolutely necessary changes, including the closure of Crop Circle, the significant reduction of non-developer employees across Prytania, and the successful realignment of games and staffing at the other three studios, including Possibility Space. And then Strain went on to blame the economic downturn of the industry and inability to find funding for the reductions. And then this went on to say that Jeff basically blamed the studio when it came to Possibility Space on employees leaking information to the press. And this was basically, you know, there was a rumor, or he had been tipped off about an article that was going to come out, was not published, from Kotaku, I believe, that was going to, you know, highlight some of the struggles that the studio was having. And as a result of that rumored article with, you know, with kind of unsubstantiated claims in it that was not published, their funding basically got cut off, is the story. And so he's like, okay, peace out, everybody. You know, you all, you know, basically, you broke confidentiality agreement. We're going to have, you know, a lawyer that you can talk to regarding employment stuff, and we're out. See you. And yeah, that's how Possibility Studios or Possibility Space kind of just collapsed like a flan in the cupboard, as Eddie Izzard would say.
Very on brand for the gaming industry recently. And like, this dude is running like he's got bodies he needs to hide. Like, it's just what a weird way to shut it down.
Yeah. He said, in the tweet from, Nicole Carpenter, you know, she kind of tweeted she captured the, note or the email in like a note and shared the screenshots. But basically, you know, he said, leaks of this nature are typically malicious and done by outside hacking. So to see internal team members under a confidentiality agreement engage in this was shocking. Given the company's own strict confidentiality and notification obligations, I immediately got on a plane for in-person meetings with our publishing partner to disclose the information breach and to discuss the impact on the project. During that discussion, our partner expressed low confidence they would be willing to invest the additional resources needed to complete the game, and they mutually agreed to cancel Vonnegut. So this guy heard about a potential article, got on a plane to meet with his publisher to say, hey, there's this article coming out, and it's probably going to say bad things. And they both agreed they should just cancel the game.
Now, the publisher saw him, that he jumped like on a red eye to come meet with them over this. And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll get out of business with your crazy butt. Like,
no.
Like, what do you mean? Maybe like, I don't know if you remember this or not, but like the GTA 6 like super alpha gameplay leaked. Like Rockstar didn't go like, well, guess we're just shutting this down.
No way. I mean, okay. Like the crazy thing is, what I imagine happened was like the beginning of Batman, A Dark Knight, right? Where it's like you have all these robbers like working with Joker, right? And like as it goes on, they're killing each other to get more of the money, right? And so I imagine that this meeting was very much like Jeff being like, you know what? I want to shut down this studio and I want to like cut my losses and keep as much money as I can. So I'm going to use this as a catalyst to basically shut the studio down, even though there's really nothing there. Right. So like he gets on a plane, he goes to the studio and he's like, hey, publisher. It's like those scenes in the movies where it's like, I'm going to talk to you. Like I'm telling you something important. I just need you to nod. Okay. And now this part, this is where you pretend to get angry. Like I imagine him having that conversation with the publisher and then basically sending this note out and being like, yeah, we both agreed we should cancel this game for the betterment of everybody. It's absolute bullshit, in my opinion. So it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. But, you know, more power to – actually, no power to this guy.
Yeah, this dude is, like, getting a fake mustache, getting, like, some sunglasses and, like, running from Mexico, like, tomorrow.
Yeah, he's like, I'm out of here. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so that is – that was that. I guess, of course, as always, the game developers and employees that are kind of caught in the mix are the real victims here. So our best wishes to those who now have to find employment in this market because Jeff Strain decided that this would be a good time for him to exit stage left based on some unsubstantiated rumor-filled article. Oh, well. We've got some more PS5 Pro leaks. Yes. And I know, Alan, you are eagerly awaiting this because you are PS5-less at the moment. So let's see what awaits you. This is from Tom Warren at The Verge. Sony's asking developers to get games ready over the summer with a push for ray tracing support. So Sony is getting ready to release a more powerful PS5 console, possibly by the end of this year. After reports of a leaked PS5 Pro specification surfaced recently, The Verge has obtained a full list of specs for the upcoming console. Sources familiar with Sony's plans tell me that developers are already being asked to ensure their games are compatible with this upcoming console, with a focus on improving ray tracing. Codenamed Trinity, the PlayStation 5 Pro model will include a more powerful GPU and a slightly faster CPU mode. All of Sony's changes point to a PS5 Pro that will be far more capable of rendering games with ray tracing enabled or hitting high resolutions and frame rates in certain titles. Sony appears to be encouraging developers to use graphics featured like ray tracing more with the PS5 Pro, with games above to use a Trinity enhanced PS5 Pro enhanced label if they provide significant enhancements. So get ready to see that on some box art and in the PlayStation Store. Sony expects GPU rendering on the PS5 Pro to be about 45% faster than the standard PlayStation 5, according to documents outlining the upcoming console. The PS5 Pro GPU will be faster, or larger, and use faster system memory to help improve ray tracing in games, etc., etc., etc. So you can dig in a bit more. There's some technical specs and jargon in here, but the long and short of it is, you know, it's happening. We're getting ourselves that mid-cycle bump, and I'm still in the camp that I think I'm gonna get one.
You know? Yeah, let's do it, Jeremy.
I think I'm gonna get one because, I mean, I got the PS4 Pro, and I think I got the PS4 Pro because I wanted God of War to look better. I think it was God of War, and there was one other title when the Pro was. Oh, it was for Remake, too. So,
yep,
FF7 Remake. So, yeah, I think. Oh no, it wasn't Remake. Remake was on the PS5. Was it? No, it wasn't. PS5 came out in November 2020. Yeah, Remake was on the PS4, and I got a PS4 Pro because I wanted it to look better. Okay, sorry. My brain is muddled. Time is a flat circle. But yeah, I can see myself getting a PS5 Pro to have that improved ray tracing, improved graphical experience, and to also to hold me over for the next few years until the PS6 arrives. So I am pretty stoked by this news.
Yeah, I just want it sooner. Like, obviously, you know, they're going to, you know, the holiday timing makes sense. But for me personally, I'm like, give it to me summer. I should have the money by then. Give it to me fast.
I want it now, and I want an enhanced
rebirth. That would make this whole my personal situation feel a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. I, you know, if anybody from Sony is listening to this, you know, if you're looking for some like people to test the hardware out, right? Alan here, he'll do some QA for you. Okay, he'll do some QA for you. No problem. So
yes, Shuhei, send it to me. I'll give you my address.
FedEx overnight in a lockbox. All right. Last story. Two more stories. Keanu Reeves. I know. You're on the edge of your seat. You're like, what about Keanu Reeves? What's new? Is this about Cyberpunk? No. This is about Sonic the Hedgehog 3, my friends, because Keanu Reeves will be voicing Shadow in Sonic the Hedgehog 3. This is from Alex Stedman at IGN. We finally know who will be voicing Shadow in the upcoming Sonic the Hedgehog 3, and it's reportedly a big name, Keanu Reeves. Reportedly a big name. It is a big name. The news comes from a THR report today, which says multiple sources have confirmed the casting to the outlet. IGN has reached out to Paramount Pictures and Reeves reps for a comment. Okay, so we'll put an asterisk on this. You know, we're waiting for the official word. It's another big franchise for John Wick's Reeves, as well as yet another video game connection for the actor who played Johnny Silverhand in Cyberpunk 2077. Reeves has been dabbling more in voice work in recent years, too, having voiced Batman in 2022's DC's League of Super Pets and Duke Kaboom in Toy Story 4. So we've got Mr. Reeves joining Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Have you seen the other two movies, Alan?
I haven't. I'm just not like a huge Sonic enjoyer. So it's like, I'm just like, okay, that's fine, I guess.
I've heard really good things. I'm in the same camp as you. I haven't seen either of them. I've heard really, really good things. I love Jim Carrey as well. So, and I've been told that his Robotnik performance is pretty high up there. It's like, you know, alongside his Grinch and stuff, he's done a really good job with it. So I should probably just pick up a streaming service and just watch it soon. Always glad to see Keanu Reeves thriving. He's a cool dude. Only heard good things about him. He's kind of like the Mr. Rogers of the acting world, along with Tom Hanks. Like, you just don't really hear bad stuff about Keanu Reeves. And so he deserves all the good that's coming to him, including more fans in his upcoming performance as Shadow the Hedgehog, we assume. All right, last story. No Rest for the Wicked enters early access this week. It'll be coming to early access on Thursday, the 18th. This is a new action RPG title from Moon Studios, who brought you the Ori franchise, Ori the Will-O-Wisps. Chapter 1 will be available for early access. There will be multiplayer functionality in the future as well, but it'll just be Chapter 1 and no multiplayer initially. And it'll be priced at $40, $39.99. I've seen the trailer and seen some early gameplay but like some of the more finalized gameplay for this early access release. And it looks really, really cool. So I will definitely be digging into it. Hopefully we'll be getting a review code for it, and we can provide our thoughts once it goes live on Thursday.
Nice. Code or codes?
Code, singular. I did request a code. Okay. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah, it'll be for Steam, so you know, maybe if you want to check it out. But I was gonna try it out on my Steam Deck. I've been putting a lot of hours into my Steam Deck. And actually, you know, Greg Miller, if you're listening to this, I hope you're happy because I'm actually selling my gaming PC. Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's happening. I decided that, you know, I have my personal MacBook that, you know, I can record my podcasts on and do all my stuff on. And I've got my Steam Deck, which scratches the itch for all the PC gaming that I'm looking to do. And, yeah, I think it's happening. So I won't have my PC tower for much longer. How does that make you feel, Alan? I feel like you're sad.
I mean, like, it's just so weird because you've had it, that PC, for a good while now.
I have. I upgraded some of the components. I mean, it's got a Ryzen 5300, I think, in there, and some other components. Upgraded the RAM recently. You know, put in a solid state drive. So I made some tweaks to it over the years, and sure, I could invest in a new GPU. I could give it a fresh life, but you know, ever since I got the Steam Deck, honestly, I've played many more Steam games, or I've played much more on Steam with my Steam Deck just because of the activation energy. Like, all I have to do is just click it on and I'm in a game that I want to play. I've been playing a ton of Cult of the Lamb. I put in like 25 hours in Cult of the Lamb in the last like 2 weeks or something. And yeah, it just facilitates my style of play for PC gaming. Or for Steam gaming, at least, more. So,
no, as always, very jelly. Two, Greg Miller will take a W any day of the week. One less PC gamer is like a better world for him.
It's true.
But ultimately, you kind of are PC gaming. It's just a different form factor.
It is, for sure. I get that. I mean, that's what I'm using that platform for. So anyway, no rest for the week coming this week. Alan, tell us about some deals. Tell us about a way that we can save some of our hard-earned scratch on games.
Yeah, so Armored Core 6, which you're a big fan of, has now hit a new low of $29.99 over at Amazon. So before this, I think the lowest was $34.99 at GameFly. That was a used copy. This is brand new. So if you've been thinking about it, $29.99, that's a pretty good price.
$30 is a fantastic price for this game. I love Armored Core 6. It was on my my top five, I believe, for 2023, which was a loaded year. So, yeah, 100% worth the $30. Go get it, play it, enjoy. And I think that's it. I think that's all that we have for today. So until next time, I'm Jeremy.
I'm Alan.
Keep gaming, everybody.
See ya.